Welcome back. Leading off, as always, is my guest, Luke Jones, our very own Luke Jones, doing great things on Baltimore Positive WNST. And I was bragging to Luke just 1 week ago from today that I was making plans to go to Vegas. I had visions of the Super Bowl. And although they're still there, they're just not as prominent as they were just a few days ago. Luke, what the heck happened to the Ravens this past Sunday?
Well, Dennis, unfortunately, and I don't say this to be flippant, it's what we've seen happen to them a number of times the last couple of years, and where it's, you know, this difference between going from good, which they have absolutely been good, they've been very good, but the transition from making that jump from very good to great, this is the latest example where you take some pause. To your point, everyone was talking about this team as the best in the NFL, at the very least. You certainly looked at it and said, no one's playing better than them. And it looked like they were going to be on their way to that once again on Sunday. But you know, Deshaun Watson, who we have since found out was playing with a broken shoulder, which, you know, put aside how you feel about him off the field for just a moment, impressive performance on his part, impressive performance by Cleveland, really on both sides of the ball, the way they played in that second half. But on the flip side, you look at the Ravens, and it's just another example of not being able to finish off a team, no one being able to make the big play late. You know, maybe Adafe Owe, you give him credit for the strip sack. No one could fall on it, but either side of the ball, they just couldn't make the big play to seal the victory. And you kind of go back to not the drawing board in the sense that you don't think this team's good or very good, or, you know, you don't think that this team's one of the more serious contenders in the AFC, but it's just another one of those examples where you just take some pause and you don't fully trust, fully embrace this team as a bona fide serious Super Bowl contender. I mean, as I pointed out in my 12 Ravens thoughts leading up to this big game with Cincinnati, this Thursday night showdown, this issue has crept up at a time, you know, since the Ravens having this reputation, this current rendition, this Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews, Marlon Humphrey, Ronnie Stanley era of Ravens football, where they already had a knock of not being a team that had broken through in January and having some shortcomings in the postseason. And now you've just added this extra layer of having issues finishing games in the fourth quarter that they should win. I mean, to their credit, they lead in all these games. It's not as though they're I joked with Nestor. I was being facetious about it, but maybe they just need to lose a couple games in regular fashion compared to just these gut-wrenching, heartbreaking, excruciating losses. And you wouldn't view it through the same lens, but at the same time, it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. You're trying to make that jump from really good to great, and they keep stubbing their toes. And not that I think Sunday's loss will ultimately cost them a playoff spot or anything that extreme, but that's a perfect example of a game that you might look back and say, you know what, we could have been playing Kansas City at home and maybe we're going to Arrowhead instead. And of course, I'm getting way ahead of our, you know, we're 2 months out from talking about that, but these are the kind of losses the last couple of years that, you know, they make the difference of having a chance to have a first round bye and home field advantage compared to being on the road and you know, having a much tougher path. Although I will say, you know, they've lost some of these games at home, so maybe home field advantage isn't what it's cracked up to be, but just a very frustrating situation because they're so good to put themselves in these positions, but then they're not finishing. And it's really been a team effort in doing that. You know, we've seen last year, it was really the defense that broke down big time in those fourth quarter blown leads. This year, you know, even though Sunday, I would certainly put a lot of it on the defense and not being able to tackle and allowing Deshaun Watson to extend plays and what have you. But, you know, it's really, for me, it's been the offense that's kind of, you know, turtled up a little bit in some of these fourth quarter blown leads where, you know, they play really well and then it just kind of goes away. So, you know, it's just frustrating because it's not an indictment on just the fact that they're 7-3. Being 7-3, if someone had told you before the season, if they're 7-3 at this point, I think you'd say, okay, I'll accept that. But it's just the manner in which it happens because you know it could be even better than that. And that's what's just really frustrating about this football team at this point in time. And it keeps happening. You know, you can't keep just brushing it off as though, well, you know, I've seen some people say that these are outliers or this is statistical noise. It's like, well, I hope the Ravens are taking it more seriously than that because it keeps happening.
Well,
And that's what's so frustrating.
I've got several questions here, and they're probably going to be out of order. But when you and I talked a week ago, we talked about the Browns and the Bengals. We talked about the possibility of being 9-2. We didn't talk about the Browns. It was the Browns and the Bengals. And the Bengals, I'm sure we're talking in terms of the Texans and the Ravens. Do you think there's a chance that both squads, the Ravens and the Bengals, look past Houston and look past the Browns? Because, all right, you got the Browns coming in, but they're missing their top three tackles. So we're thinking the defensive line is going to feast, right? Which they did in some spots, to be fair, and other spots they didn't, right? And they allowed Deshaun Watson to look like Steve McNair in the past, breaking
That's what I
tackles with
said,
his
right?
legs. Yeah, breaking tackles with his legs and whatnot. And so you're right. So my question, do you think there's a chance, and not making excuses for him, that both of these squads, given the way that they both lost, I mean, Joe Burrow throws interception of back-to-back drives. And so, you know, it was always the current team and the Thursday night opponent.
Yeah, I'll say this much. Do I think the Ravens went into the game feeling that way? No, because to me, I mean, they scored 17 points in the first quarter. They started so fast.
Understood.
However, Justin Madubuike said it after the game, and I applaud him because it was a very honest answer. Because so many times, you know, you hear the coach speak, you know, these guys rehearse answers, you know,
Coachees,
PR
let's
coaches them
call it
up, all that.
Coachees, right? The same
Right.
script, right?
But he flat out said, he said, look, I'm going to be honest. When Kyle Hamilton scores the pick six on the second play from scrimmage and Keaton Mitchell scores the touchdown on the opening drive for the offense and you're up 14-0, he said, none of us were thinking we were going to lose that game at that point. Now, he didn't say we started thinking about Cincinnati at that point. I don't think they started thinking about
No.
Cincinnati right there and then. But I think what does happen and what you have to ask at this point, for me, this is not, it's why when I hear people chalk it up to just coaching, look, this is a collective thing that's happening here. There are too many breakdowns and they've been across the board. Coaching, offense, defense, special teams, go back to the Indianapolis game and the gaffe they had late in regulation there that gave
Right,
the
the fair
Colts extra
catch.
time.
Sure.
I mean, they've just had breakdowns across the board. So for me, it is a mental question at this point in time. And that's not to say that the Ravens are broken, but it does make me question that does this team get too overconfident and then they just think, oh, we're going to cruise and this is fine.
No.
And then maybe Cincinnati is in the back of their mind at that point in
Right.
time, but
But Luke,
it is very
you're
frustrating.
fighting human nature though at that point, because I tweeted out two
Sure.
things. I tweeted out two things. The first thing I tweeted out was, folks, there's 55 minutes left in the game, which is an eternity. Never mind
For
11
sure.
minutes in the fourth quarter. And I said they should have the mindset it's 0-0. But it's much easier said than done, Luke, because you can't
It
relax
is.
when you have 55 freaking minutes on the clock. The game is
Right.
still wide open, given the officiating, the calls, what happens, unintended consequences, right? So to me, that's what I was happy we were up 14-0, a lot happier than if we were, but if we were down 14-0, my tweet would have been the exact same thing. You got 55 minutes to go. Let's have a 0-0 mindset. But again, and I don't know if the coaching staff was sending that message on the sideline. I don't know if the players were talking about it, but that was the point to step on their neck, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, and that's what's really frustrating, and that's, you know, it's what we've seen. Now, when you jump out to the lead they had against Detroit or Seattle, then okay, you know, you're leading by 30,
Piled
then
on.
chances are you're probably okay, especially by the time you build
Yeah.
that 30-point lead, it's late in the third quarter, the fourth quarter,
Right.
like these. But,
But a
you know,
two-touchdown lead in
so
the fourth
I
quarter,
think
Luke, with
what
11 minutes to go, it's not a safe lead. It just isn't.
of course,
It
of
isn't.
course. I mean, it's great to feel like you can be excited in that moment, but then it's like, okay, you move on. The moment's over, right? I mean, that's the great line in Bull Durham. You know, Crash
Right.
Davis talking to Nuke LaLoosh, where he, they're in the dugout, and Nuke is, you know, for anyone, I'm talking about the baseball movie Bull Durham, for anyone listening who hasn't watched it, you know, Nuke LaLoosh is this hotshot young pitching prospect, and Crash Davis is the veteran catcher. And, you know, they get back to the dugout after a strong inning, and Nuke's really happy, and he's kind of smelling himself, and Crash then proceeds to go through the two or three things he didn't like about how Nuke was pitching right there. And Nuke says to him, well, can't you just let me enjoy the moment? And what does Crash Davis says? Says the moment's over. And, you know, the idea there is to compartmentalize. Yeah, celebrate the touchdown in the moment. You're excited. You jumped out to a lead. But to your point, there's a lot of ball game left. So you asked me about the Ravens. Yeah, I think we've seen that. The Bengals, because you asked me about them, and I did not watch that game live, of course. You know, I perused it. I was able to review it like anyone else. But I think with Cincinnati, and I say this as someone who picked the Bengals to win the division going into the season, I think it was very clear. I don't think anyone can be dismissive of the calf injury and the impact that had on Joe Burrow early in the season. But, you know, as much as we complain about how the Ravens have struggled to finish some football games this year, this is a Cincinnati team that's been really Jekyll and Hyde. And I don't mean just Joe Burrow and the offense, but across the board. I mean, they look like a team much like the Ravens, maybe not quite as emphatically as the Ravens, but they had won four games in a row, and they were looking much more like the Super Bowl deep playoff run caliber Bengals that we've seen over the last couple of years. But they go out Sunday, and let's be clear, and let's give CJ Stroud and the Texans some credit. They're a good football team, and that's a team that if they're going to be a, you know, if we're talking in mid-January and they're playing wild card weekend, that's not going to stun me at this point in time, because I think that's a team that has a lot of talent. They're young. And yep. You wonder how they're going to hold up over a full 17 games, but you know, so you give them credit, but at the same time, this is a Bengals team that, you know, especially there's been a lot of focus on their offense because of Burrow, and obviously they've been missing T. Higgins now for, you know, he'll be out again for this matchup, but you know, their defense has been very up and down at times. You know, it's looked like a Lou Anarumo defense that you'd say, okay, that, you know, they're not dominant, but they're good, and then other times they've looked awful. I mean, they looked really bad against Houston. I mean, they've given up big plays this year. You know, their run defense has been either good or absolutely terrible. So you look at it statistically and it looks really bad as a result. So, you know, so for me, I don't know if it's so much Cincinnati was looking past them, although it wouldn't shock me whatsoever, knowing that we've talked about the Ravens and the importance of this game. I mean, this game's really important for Cincinnati. Let's look around the league. Let's look for context right now. If Cincinnati drops this game, they fall to 5-5, which is the same record as the reeling Buffalo Bills, who just fired their offensive coordinator. And oh yeah, the Bengals play in a much tougher division, and they have a schedule that, depending on the metric, some have said Buffalo has a tougher schedule, some have said Cincinnati, but point is they both have really difficult schedules. So if Cincinnati loses this game,
absolutely.
Look, there's still a lot of season left, and I'm not calling this a must-win game for either team. It's too early for that. I mean, we're not even to Thanksgiving. But is this a very pivotal game for both teams, but especially Cincinnati? There's no question about it. So was there some looking ahead on their part? I'll hear that, although they jumped out to an early 7-0 lead. So I just think there's something to be said. One, it's the NFL, and other teams are good. And to your point, you got to play a full 60 minutes. I mean, this isn't like college football where some FCS rolls in against Georgia or Alabama or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Take your pick of what power conference school you want to talk about. And, you know, the favorite jumps out to a lead and then it's over, right? Yeah. They just cruise after that. You know, it doesn't work that way in the NFL. But was there a little bit of looking ahead for either one of those teams? Wouldn't shock me. You know, and like I said, for the Ravens, it wasn't to kick off the game. They started so fast, but it does make you wonder, and this goes back to the overall theme that's just been so maddening of why is this team that is capable of jumping out to these big leads in some of these losses, if they weren't that good, they wouldn't do that every week. Right. But why are they not finishing these games? And again, that for me is what's holding me back from fully embracing this team and saying, boy, they're a really serious Super Bowl contender. They are a great football team. They are ready to take on Kansas City. And when this happened, and look, I was getting really close to that point last week, but then this happens again, and now I'm hedging a little bit. I don't think they're collapsing. I don't think this is anything to panic about in the sense of where they're going the rest of the regular season, but in terms of what we've talked about now for the better part of 4 or 5 years, this team making the jump, this team not just getting to the playoffs, but then being ready to take that, make that deep run and to win 3 or 4 games in a row, which is what is required to win a championship. I look at this and I see this happening. It's not every week, it's not every game, but it happens enough that then when you're going up against really good teams in the playoffs, which is all you're facing, that's where I just look at this and say, you know, why is this happening? Why does this keep happening? What is missing here? And I can't pinpoint it, Dennis. And it's clear the Ravens can't pinpoint it, or they would have remedied it by now.
I will tell you, and the Ravens and the Ravens fan base what I think it is. In the NFL red zone, Scott Hansen always talks about the witching hour, where losses turn into wins and wins turn into losses. I don't think this is unique and specific to the Ravens. Now, we, through our lenses, that's how we view it. But in the entire NFL, I mean, how many games just this past weekend went down to the wire? I do think with the rules that favor the offense, if you need a field goal to win, if you get the ball last, you have a great chance of winning. Yeah. Not only that, but if you're down, if you need a touchdown to win, you still have a great chance of winning. So in a parity-laden league, that it's very hard to build a dominant. You can't buy a team. Yeah. And then you factor in the officiating, right? I mean, I go back to years ago, and it was Brady against Mahomes the year that Brady was with the Patriots. And who was it? Frank Clark or somebody lined up with his hand in the neutral zone on a fourth down play, and the refs threw the flag, and the Patriots got another chance, and they won the ballgame. Yeah. These things factor in heavily. I'm not making excuses for the Ravens. I think all the points you make are valid, very valid. But I do think that in the NFL, the game was designed to go down to the last minute. Yeah. And a lot of times, to me, I go back to 2012 in a Super Bowl, and I'm sitting at the Superdome, and you were there as well. And the – who was it? The Niners get a first and goal on the 5-yard line, and you got Crabtree and McAllister hand-fighting, and we're holding our breath. If the ref had thrown the flag there, yeah, you could have made that argument. Yeah. But he ate the flag. So to me, there is an element of luck that comes down when these games get down to the wire. But with the talent level being so equal, how could it not be? So I don't think it's – I'm not happy about it, but I don't think that this thing is unique to the Ravens. I don't think it's, you know, the alleged Mike Tomlin quote, which I haven't seen anywhere, where he said the Ravens don't play ball in the fourth quarter. I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah. I don't think it's as dire as some make it out to be, but I do wonder about their DNA at this point. I mean, I just have to. And that doesn't mean I don't think they're a playoff team. That doesn't mean I don't think they're capable of making a deep run. But when these things continue to happen, to me, there is a cumulative impact on your psyche. I mean, the mental part of the game, and look, I'm saying this as someone who loves football analytics. I look at nerdy stats like DVOA and EPA and success rate and all the different things that tell you that this is an excellent football team. And I buy into so much of that. But at the same time, there also are intangibles. And for as much as John Harbaugh's body of work as a head coach in his, 16th year, and he's got that pedigree as far as being a Super Bowl winning coach, and a lot of that success was a long time ago, and this current group of players does not have that to lean on. So there is something to the pedigree part that I do, and again, these questions started even before the last couple of years where now this has been a thing for them. So I do have some concern about that. Again, do I think that means they're going to collapse or miss the playoffs or anything like that? No, of course not. These are all questions that I have that aren't going to be answered until January. And that's the case that the Ravens win tonight and win out, hypothetically, if they do that. Not that I think they're necessarily going to do that, but it is something I wonder about. Now, one thing I want to add, and then we can look more towards Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Sunday's game specifically, I do think a major factor, forgetting about the big picture things we were just talking about, I do have some concerns about fatigue for this football team with the way that they did not tackle on Sunday. And they've tackled so well this season. A couple things to keep in mind. They still haven't had their bye week. You know, their bye week's still a couple weeks away here. So, and that's, it's been a later bye week for this is a later bye week than they've had in a very, very long time, which I think will pay dividends on the other side of that, but you still have to get there. So I look at what happened in Sunday's game with the defense really faltering late in that football game and having tackling issues. And, you know, people focused on Marcus Williams. Look, I mean, there are Patrick Queen missed tackles. Geno Stone missed tackles. I mean, there were missed tackles all over the place in Sunday's game for their defense. So I was a little concerned to see that. Now, Cleveland is a more physical football team than Cincinnati, so I think that's good. However, I am a little concerned on the short week. They played, what, 78 defensive snaps, I think it was, in Sunday's game. I do have a little bit of concern there in terms of, are they just they're a little tired. And we talked, and all this is cumulative, right? We talked about the West Coast trip, talked about the London trip. All of those things have a cumulative impact, even if it doesn't show up every single Sunday. So I do have a little concern there. However, as I also noted in my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com, in noting that for the Ravens side, Cincinnati's defense also played a lot of snaps against Houston on Sunday. So the fatigue factor, is it a little bit neutralized? You know, if both teams are playing on a Thursday night, it's a short week. Even though it's a short trip, Cincinnati, you throw travel in for them. We'll see, right? I mean, ideally, from a competitive standpoint, from an entertainment standpoint, I'd love to see these teams playing on Sunday night or Monday night rather than Thursday night. But the familiarity that they have with each other, I still, you know, I expect it to be a good, fun game, you know, still, especially relative to what we normally see on Thursday night football. But I do want to throw that out there with the way that the Ravens lost that football game Sunday. I do wonder if this is a team that's a little tired right now and, you know, really could use that bye week. And that doesn't mean, hey, I'm picking them to win. You know, I'm picking, you know, you can check out my prediction at BaltimorePositive.com. I'm picking a 23-20 win, which, by the way, you look at my track record of picking games this year, Ravens fans might not be happy to hear that I'm picking Baltimore tonight. But, you know, I do wonder, and I do think in this game, much more so than the Pittsburgh game or the Indianapolis game, I do think fatigue was a factor as well, because we haven't seen this team have those kind of issues tackling this year. Now, last year, year before that, I think you could see some times where the tackling left something to be desired, but this has been a very sound tackling team, and knowing how they like to play against Joe Burrow with a lot of those two high safety looks and keeping things in front of them and making him throw underneath, you better tackle well, or that strategy doesn't work nearly as well. So they definitely need a bounce back performance there, but just wanted to throw that out there that I do wonder if this is a football team that's a little tired right now, not in some doomsday scenario, but just where they are right now at this point in the season.
They also went up against the 2020 version of Deshaun Watson. In all fairness, the guy, I mean, give him credit. The guy was a superstar before his issues and whatnot. He played like his old self for the first time that I've seen in a long time. But I got to tell you one thing. If I'm an offensive coordinator right now, I design plays where I'm allowing, I'm putting two or three offensive linemen behind my running back until they stop it. The play where I think it was a 12-yard run, I forget who the running back was at the play. It might have been Hunt or the other guy, Ford. But they pushed them for 12 yards down the field. Whether it's a tush push, Luke, I mean, if I'm an OC right now, I'm designing play. I'm putting Gus Edwards out there and putting guys behind him and pushing him forward. They've got to stop these scrums, these rugby-type scrums, because if I'm an OC right now, I'm taking full advantage of that fact, Luke.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know how.
Eating the runner, to me, it should be disallowed. I played high school and college ball. I never had anybody in my back pushing me forward. Yeah, I could have gained another 4, 5, 10 yards perhaps had I done that. They need to stop that, because to me, I don't want this game that I love to morph into rugby, and I hate that tush push on the goal line. I really do.
We'll just have to agree to disagree on that. I mean, I think what we're seeing now is other teams are starting to take advantage of this. And look, one thing we have said, and you, I know you and I have talked about this, we've also lamented how the game has become so much more wide open and the focus on the passing game. So maybe some of this stuff is bringing back some balance, right?
Yeah,
that, okay,
right.
the running game is becoming a little more important again. And we've talked about how
that's
offense is down this year. So, you know, I find so much of this, Dennis, is cyclical. I mean, and we talked about this 5 years ago when the Ravens were talking about the revolution, right? The evolution of their offense.
And it was.
And Greg Roman, but the point that was made by so many who are really, you know, X's and O's football junkies was Greg Roman was bringing back elements of offensive football that the NFL were in vogue 50, 60, 70
sure.
years ago. And that's not to say that it's ever going to go back to the days of leather helmets and single bar face masks or anything crazy like that. But the point is there are trends. Things are cyclical. We are seeing a time now, and we've talked about it in passing, but I've seen a couple deep dives on it where scoring's down. And I think a big reason why is the defenses have finally caught up to the style of offensive football that we were seeing teams play over the last decade. And it's not just scheme, but also the rule changes being implemented that put the offense at an advantage. So you're seeing defenses finally adapt. Mike McDonald being one of those defensive coordinators doing those types of things. So there are trends, there are ebbs and flows, not just within a season, but year to year, you know, a 5 year period to 5 year period, decade to decade. I mean, that's why prior to Sunday's loss, I had been so impressed with statistically what the Ravens defense had done to this point, because, you know, they were doing things that stacked up pretty favorably to some of the very best defenses that the Ravens had 20 or 20 plus years ago, which was, might as well be talking about a different sport when you consider
right.
the rule changes and whatnot. So I hear the point you're making. And I think in some of these cases, sometimes you do kind of question, okay, do we need more of a, I know people complained a lot about forward progress and blowing whistles at times with it being too quick, but now it feels like we're getting to a point where, you know, maybe they need to blow the whistle, you know, on a couple of these plays. And the Ravens have been involved.
Well, we're seeing
Arizona
Sunday. We're seeing offensive linemen pick up running backs and carry them forward. I mean, that again, you can't do that. But until they call it,
but you
I'm
can
is,
because they're not calling it right.
What
right.
I'm saying is, because you can, Todd Monken should pay attention
sure.
and implement those elements into his own offense. Take advantage of it while you can. Just
no
don't
doubt.
Let the other teams do it to you. That's what bothers me is when other teams do it to you and you don't adapt quick enough and take advantage of the same thing.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, I think part of the issue, and this is, you know, and I don't want to dwell on this point too
right.
much, but
sure.
I think part of the issue with Philly, you know, the brotherly shove or the tush push, whatever, you know, whatever they're calling it these days. I think part of the problem has been, how exactly do you police that? You know, what's a blatant push and what's, you know, where you can kind of go through your ball carrier looking to block somebody, but you're pushing him forward in the progress. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's easier said than done to completely outlaw something like that. But, you know, for me, what I just want to see is teams adapt, defenses adapt. Philadelphia just a couple weeks ago, I mean, they ran a play off that formation, a different play off that formation. So, you know, in the same way that I remember 15 years ago, when the Tony Sperano and the Dolphins broke out the Wildcat with Ronnie Brown, right? I mean, that was considered such a big thing at the time. Did that drastically change football? No. I mean, it was an interesting wrinkle for a little while.
It was. And Ray Lewis said it's, when he played him and shut him down, he said it's still football. It's still blocking and
tackling. Exactly.
It's the same game. So I get it.
Exactly. So I believe me, I hear, you know, some of your concerns there, and I also hear your point as far as in the meantime, take advantage of it. If there is going to be restrictions on that kind of a play, you know, and really, let's be clear, the couple times this happened to the Ravens, I mean, it's not as though those plays started like Philadelphia at the goal line, how they do it. I mean, it really just kind of evolved into that as the play progressed, and, you know, linemen are, hey, do what you can do to advance the ball carrier. And on the flip side, if you're the defense, look, you can't give up. You can't play defense waiting for the whistle to blow. And I think that's what happens in those cases where guys are accustomed to just holding on and waiting for a whistle, where you say, no, you need to, just like they're pumping their legs, you need to pump your legs too and bring the guy down. So, you know, it's been interesting to see this kind of become, you know, a talking point, for lack of a better term. But definitely, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, exploit it, take advantage of it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, might as well until the time comes where or if you know, they decide to restrict that. But again, that was another example to me of a Ravens defense that just looked tired on
I
Sunday.
agree. I
And
agree with
again,
you.
let's hope that you know, at the very least, both teams are tired Thursday night, so maybe it won't be quite as magnified. But I do wonder if this is a Ravens team that, you know, at the point where they need a little bit of rest here. And again, that's any team. Every team has a bye. Every team's going to go through periods of time where they look tired. This isn't some indictment or even an excuse, you know, to forgive how they played Sunday. That was unacceptable. But if you're trying to, you know, kind of dig down to kind of figure out why it happened, I do wonder if that was, you know, part of the equation at work.
All right. So now, as we transition our conversation to the Bengals game, and it seemed like we're talking about actually both of these guys almost every week there, Ronnie Stanley and Marlon Humphrey. And man, oh man, if the Ravens don't use their first pick in the 2024 draft for left tackle, I will eat my favorite Ravens hat. And it's not a look. It is what it is. I just think that his best football is behind him. He's injured. His legs aren't what they used to be. He's a liability now at left tackle. He can't anchor. And this does not bode well for the offensive line. A healthy Ronnie Stanley is a big benefit to the offensive line, but it seemed like these injuries have really caught up to him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I wouldn't go as far as to say he's a liability when he's been playing. However, he's certainly not playing like a $20 million tackle. I think that is very evident at this point in time. I agree with you in terms of him having the issues with anchoring compared to how he used to look and him having more trouble. I'll point out, and we talked about this last week, he has gone up against a couple really good pass rushers the last couple weeks, and there are going to be times where you're not. You know, I think we even joked and talked about Jonathan Ogden looked mortal against Dwight Freeney, you know, who was another player who was a special
Sure.
talent on the other side of the football. But for me, it just continues to come back to the lack of availability. I mean, this is, and look, not even saying this isn't a question about a guy being soft or not wanting to play or anything like that. He's just not on the field enough. He's not available enough at this point in time. And he's going to be 30 years old next year. I mean, this isn't going to get better now as he approaches age 30 and is on the wrong side of 30. So I'm in agreement with you. And look, you would know more, certainly more than I would at this point in time, what next year's left tackle draft class looks like. We don't know where the Ravens are going to be picking. We don't know
Right.
how guys are going to test out. So
But
I can't.
there's talent. Just the good news is there's talent there
Sure.
available late in the first round. There's multiple players that can
Yeah.
play that would be good fits for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be very difficult to sell me on the idea that the Ravens, even if it's not first round, second round,
Right.
definitely,
No,
you know, like
it's a
somewhere
very
early
yeah, it's a very
where.
good year. It's a very good year for defensive backs. For cornerbacks specifically, and also left tackles, which to me it's 1A and 1B. We can make arguments about other positions, but again, as we are going to talk about Marlon Humphrey, they definitely need some secondary help, and they need to address those two positions with the first two picks in the draft, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not quite as concerned with corner, although certainly Humphrey going down again with it, which thank goodness it wasn't an Achilles as some of the early fears were. I mean, it's a calf issue. Yeah, I mean, he was officially doubtful for this game. I mean, I can't tell you the last time the Ravens had a player who was doubtful play. You know, maybe he's back for the Chargers game, which would be nice. Stanley. I'm kind of the thought we probably don't see him until after the bye, just based on how history has gone. And this is the same knee that he hurt back in week one, and he missed three games at that point in time. So you know, I have substantial concerns about the viability of Ronnie Stan continuing to view Ronnie Stanley as plan A without having a very serious plan B in place for next year, with that also coupling as a succession plan for Ronnie Stanley. What Not saying you definitely move on from them next year, but I think at this point in time, you've got to be taking a long look there. Corner, I feel in a general sense, yeah. I mean, that you know, it's been a number of years now since I mean, the last time they drafted a corner in the first round was 2017, Marlon Humphrey. That'll be 7 years coming this spring, so probably a good idea to be in that market. You know, first, second, third round, but. Brandon Stevens is looking like a heck of a pick at this point in time, which we would not have been saying this even 3 months ago, Dennis. So you never really know. So, you know, in the case of Humphrey, he had the foot surgery in August. He missed the first four games. I want to see how he comes. If he comes back against the Chargers or he's back after the bye week and plays at a high level the rest of the year, that alleviates some of my concern there, other than just saying, hey, you want to add another young corner to the mix? Because, you know, look what they did this year offseason wise. Rock Ya-Sin, veteran signing. Ronald Darby, late training camp signing. I mean, and look, those guys are solid depth, but they're not long-term answers for you. Now, it looks like Brandon Stevens could be a long-term answer. He's shaping up that way. You know, see how he finishes the year. But, boy, I mean, he's one of the great stories on this football team this year. But, you know, for me, I will say this. I think Marlon Humphrey was trending, playing really good football the last 2-3 weeks, was looking more and more like himself. Didn't have, like, a big splash play. But I think he was playing at a high level where – I haven't seen that consistently from Ronnie Stanley, who, you know, has looked pretty good at times, but has not looked, certainly the body of work has not resembled the guy we saw pre-ankle injury. And I think what was concerning for me is I'm not sure he was even playing quite as well as he did last year when he came back. So I think they absolutely have to take a long look at their offensive tackle picture. Keeping in mind, Morgan Moses, you know, on the opposite side, you know, I mean, you have him. So love McCary from a depth standpoint. Daniel Falele, or, you know, is he looking like he's going to become a starter in the NFL 2 years in? I don't know. You know, he to me looks more like just a depth piece rather than a guy that you're going to pencil in to start for you. So they've got to look at that position. There's no doubt. And corner, not so much having big concerns about Marlon Humphrey. But I think just in general, yeah. I mean, that's it's one of the premium positions, Dennis. I mean, that's a position you should be, depending on your draft capital, depending on where you're picking, depending on what the talent level of that draft class is at that position in a given year, that's a position you should be taking swings almost every single year at some point in the draft. And, you know, it's been a while since they've taken one early. So I think that would be be fair to at least consider that, especially if Marlon Humphrey, you know, comes back and maybe isn't playing at a high enough level as we're used to seeing, understanding that, okay, it's not an Achilles, but a calf injury for a defensive back, that can also be tricky. And that's why I think they need to be careful here, especially with the bye coming up, you know, not to push him too hard to come back, risking a setback. And then you're starting to worry about him being available for late in the season when things really start to matter even more.
Yeah, no question about it, Luke. So they have to shuffle the offensive line now against the Bengals for sure. I'm guessing we'll see Patrick McCary at left tackle. Morgan Moses, is he going to be available at right tackle? Because, you know, he's been practicing, but we haven't seen him on the field.
He doesn't have a game status designation. He said on Tuesday he was prepared to play. I think for me, it's not that I don't expect him out there, but he's had this shoulder issue, you know, shoulder, chest, you know, like what it's kind of, we don't know specifically what it is, but remember he hurt that initially in that Cleveland game back in week 4, missed week 5, came back, played a couple weeks. And then late in the Detroit game? I'm trying, yeah, all these games run together when we get this late in the season, but the Detroit game, he left a little bit early I guess it was Arizona. The point is he's missed a couple games, you know, missed a little bit of action since then. And, you know, for me, where it was a little bit of a red flag, Dennis, was he was listed as a full participant in practices last week and still sat out. That, to me, in my experiences covering this team and trying to interpret injury reports and try to figure out what's real and what's noise and what's a non-issue, that leads me to wonder if he's dealing with the kind of injury that isn't going to get better, and he's just going to be playing through that the rest of the year. And that's not to say he can't play at a high enough level, but I will be interested to see how he looks. And certainly the good news, you know, is he's not going to be going up against Sam Hubbard, who's out with an ankle injury, but Trey Hendrickson is going to play after a lot of talk about him not playing this week. McCary did a very good job against him. Keep in mind, McCary played left tackle back in week 2 because Stanley was out at that point. So he played very well in that matchup. But for me, that's going to be a pivotal matchup because, you know, we I mentioned how up and down the Bengals defense has been. They're banged up on the edges. You know, to me, that sounds like an opportunity to see if you can get Keaton Mitchell free on the perimeter a little bit more, especially after he played so sparingly in the second half last week. But in order for that to happen, they need a good performance from McCary and Morgan Moses. So, yeah, they're going to have McCary at left tackle. They have Morgan Moses at right tackle, and we'll see how that looks. You know, it certainly they did the job in week two against Cincinnati, but that was a long time ago, and this is a Cincinnati team that's coming in more urgency than the Ravens are even feeling for them to get a win. I think you have to look at it that way if you're trying to look at it objectively, just as an observer.
Yeah, that's been my number one concern as well, Luke. A lot of times where teams are evenly matched, you know, we look naturally at who needs the game more.
Yeah.
The Bengals need the game more for the than the Ravens do, but that's why the Ravens have to bring their A game. They have to go all out and execute. And offensively, how do you see the Ravens attacking the Bengals?
Well, I think, you know, it's so interesting because back in week two, they were so banged up. Remember, they were banged up on the offensive line. They didn't have Stanley. They didn't have Linderbaum. Odell Beckham sat out that game. You know, they trying to think, Bateman may have missed that game too. I can't remember off the top of my head, but the point is they were far less than 100%. You know, they had already lost J.K. Dobbins, you know, the week before for the season. So, you know, they played so much quick game, right? I mean, they dropped back and they threw the ball a lot, and the ball came out of Lamar Jackson's hands quickly. And that worked very well for them. I don't know if we'll see that again. I think because you've seen Cincinnati have some of their issues with stopping the run, you know, to me that lends itself to really trying to run the football and use play action, you know, try to take a couple deep shots, which I know Lamar has missed on in recent weeks, and he has not been throwing a very good deep ball here recently. I think, you know, he expressed some of the frustration on, you know, some of these deep balls. There hasn't necessarily been a ton of separation. Zay Flowers separated on that one last week. I mean, that should have been six. And Lamar overthrew a wide open Zay Flowers. This is a Cincinnati defense that has given up some big plays in the passing game. So, you know, I think you're going to see a more balanced approach for them. You know, I think back in week two, it was very much a case of come out and play some quick game. And I think there were some questions at that point in time, certainly with no Dobbins, banged up on the O-line. You know, Gus Edwards at that point, you know, that there had been some questions in training camp about, you know, just where he was physically. I mean, Justice Hill. I mean, so, you know, not that they didn't run the ball well in that game, but I don't think that was necessarily viewed as the plan for them to do that. So I think you'll see I think you'll see them try to run the ball. It's a Thursday night game. You know, generally speaking, you try to streamline your game plan. That sounds like a good way to streamline your game plan. Maybe mix in a few more design runs to Lamar Jackson. You know, I think when they've done that here recently, it's worked out nicely for them in doing that. So, you know, but I think play action, you know, this secondary and these safeties are suspect. You know, we talked about that back in week two, you know, the transition they've made losing Jesse Bates and, you know, I mean, having two new starting safeties back there. So, you know, it's a Bengals defense that I hesitate to say it's bad collectively, you know, like that it's just bad across the board, but statistically it's been bad just because of how inconsistent it's been. I mean, they've looked good and they look like they were getting on a roll, and then you saw what Houston did against them on Sunday. So if Houston can do that, why can't the Ravens do that, especially playing at home and Cincinnati being the road team on a short week? But I think it's going to involve more running game, and I think you're going to see play action, and I think they're going to take some shots, whereas that week two was much more Lamar, take the ball, throw it, get rid of it quickly. Don't let Cincinnati's pass rush get to you. And, you know, with Cincinnati not having Hubbard and with Trey Hendrickson, who's playing, I mean, he doesn't even have a game status designation, but I do wonder how close to 100% he is. I think, you know, try to force the issue a little bit and try to run right at him, see if that knee's going to hold up. So, you know, I definitely want to see them get Keaton Mitchell more involved in the process of talking about that run game. And look, while I mentioned that just in passing, yes, he needs to play more. There's no doubt about that, but he also has to show that he can do the other things, pass protection, blitz pickup, things of that nature. Hey, Lamar Jackson wasn't a perfect pass, but it was a pass that hit him right in the belly in the end zone. Yep. I mean, you know,
Right
You
between
catch
the three
that?
and right between the three and the four. It was
So
right there.
some of that is also he's an undrafted rookie. He missed the beginning of the season. In truth, and John's not going to come right out and say this because he doesn't want to throw the kid under the bus. And also, he's not going to throw Todd Monken under the bus. But I do wonder if part of that equation was they don't think he's ready for a full workload from, you know, a mental, maybe not even the physical part, although he's had the hamstring also. Let's throw that out there. But maybe physically and mentally, maybe they say, you know what? This is still, we're going to keep working him in, but we're going to spoon feed him a little bit here and there week by week, and we're going to increase that. But that said, even if you're going to accept that and say, all right, I'll accept that, even though four offensive snaps in the second half, come on, that's too light. Certainly, if you see a similar pattern develop on Thursday night, I think it fans and you know anyone that's watching this game far less understanding because I mean this kid is
yeah. Look,
I mean he is a spark plug. He's electric, and until someone stops him, like really stops him, and he's not breaking off 30 plus yard plays, you got to keep finding ways to get him the rock as much as you can.
Yeah, you have to put the ball in his hands. I don't care if he's a liability with pass protection. I don't care if the other team knows him when he's in the game. He's going to run the ball. He can go left, right, up the middle. He can go out for a pass. You still have to defend him. So to me, even if he's going to get the rock, and obviously when he's in there, I don't care. And I'm glad you addressed it. Give him more touches. He's electric.
I'll go a step further, and I agree with that point. Even if he's not touching the ball on a given play.
Sure.
Having him out there at this point, even as a decoy, boy, that does that potentially open things up and spread a defense and stress the defense even more. And that could be the time where, oh, Lamar Jackson takes off with it then, which, oh, by the way, that still works really, really well too. Even if you've got Keaton Mitchell or you've got Zay Flowers. So, you know, And John, his quote this week, and you can check out my, follow me at Baltimore Luke on Twitter. You can see I even, tweeted out the entire quote. That was as close as you're going to get to an admission that, we need to see more of him. Wasn't going to throw the kid under the bus, and he wasn't going to throw Todd Monken under the bus either. So, but no. That said, if we don't see more of him in this game, I think, the tone of that question, the tone of some of that criticism is going to turn much more harsh if there's a repeat of what we saw last Sunday.
He gives me Chris Johnson vibes, but in his prime time when he played for the Titans. I mean, he's that explosive, that electric. You blink and he's gone. Into your point, you have to account for him when he's on the field. Now, on the other side of the ball, and again, I haven't really done a lot of homework on the Bengals, but I'm guessing T. Higgins is still out, correct?
He is. No T. Higgins, but
he's a Ravens killer. He really is.
Yeah.
I love him. I wish we drafted him. He was one of my draft crushes coming out of Clemson many years ago. But I'd rather go up against that Bengals offense without him in the lineup.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, obviously, more of an emphasis on Ja'Marr Chase. And I will say this. I think Chase is more of a factor in this game than he was in week two because Joe Burrow is moving around much better. That calf is not an issue. Whereas – I mentioned the Ravens' quick game back in week two. I mean, Joe Burrow had to get rid of the ball so quick in that game because he couldn't move. And I mean, it's not even that the Ravens put, it's not like they blitzed him a ton in that game, but it was just you knew he was a statue back there. So I think in the same way we talk about Lamar Jackson and extending plays, Joe Burrow doesn't extend plays to take off and run, but he does extend plays to give his receivers more time for scramble drills and things of that nature. And that's where you do have a little more concern with Ja'Marr Chase, who, had the back issue last week, but clearly didn't impact him too much. And he's not even on the injury report this week. So I don't think that's a factor anymore, but you said it with no T. Higgins, that makes the Bengals easier, not easy, but easier to defend in the passing game because you have Chase. I don't want to be disrespectful to Tyler Boyd. I mean, my goodness, in Baltimore of all places, know that Tyler Boyd can still make plays, but he had a bad drop in that game against Houston. And beyond those two, who are you really looking to that really concerns you from a pass catching standpoint? I mean, I think one of the big mistakes for Cincinnati this offseason wasn't even so much that to let Hayden Hurst go. I mean, Hayden Hurst is a solid tight end, but he's nothing special. But Irv Smith has not been a good plan to pivot to. They've really missed playmaking elements from their tight end position that I think in the past, when, you know, whether it was Hurst last year, whether it was CJ Uzama prior to that, who had some big games against the Ravens in the past, I think that's an element that they've been missing. So, you know, to me, it's very, very clear cut. You cannot let Chase get behind you, you know, which easier said than done, because he's great. And, you know, every team says that every single week. You know, you've got to not let Tyler Boyd hurt you too much from the slot. And, you know, you would expect Kyle Hamilton's going to be there a lot, so that should help in that regard. And the thing that, you know, we talked about it in passing and I mentioned the fatigue, but if there's one area that was, once again, we were reminded of on Sunday, one area of this Ravens defense that's a little bit softer, they're softer against the run. So you can't let Joe Mixon break tackles and get yards from you. I mean, this isn't a great Cincinnati running game by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I don't think Joe Mixon's having an awful year, but
he's a tough
he's
guy.
Not a guy that's keeping.
He's
tough, but he is. But he's not a guy that you're too worried of running away from you. But you have to tackle. And again, this goes back to what I said that was concerning for me was their tackling issues against Cleveland. Cincinnati's not nearly as physical. They're not going to try to play you that same way. But the way the Ravens want to play is keep everything underneath, keep everything in front of you. And that's great, assuming you tackle. If you don't tackle, then, you know, I mean, oh, such an element. It's such an elementary part of defense, but, you know, they've got to do that. And when they've had their issues in games this year, you know, where they've had some of these problems where teams have climbed back in, you know, you've looked at it, they've had some leaks from a run defense standpoint. I mean, Indianapolis, you know, remember that Zach Moss had a big day against them.
He did.
This past week. Arizona, you know, with them like creeping it back into that football game in the fourth quarter, I mean, they were able to run the football well, so that's something that you do have to watch out here for. But that said, yeah, this isn't a Cincinnati offense that is exactly known for running the rock at a high level. So, you know, that's something, again, just, you know, play sound defense. You got to tackle. It's that simple. If they do that, then I think we'll see them do what they've done against the Bengals and Joe Burrow here over the last, you know, going back to last year, which is not shut them down, but keep them in check. And if you can keep them in check, if you can keep them to, I don't know, 20 points, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood, I think you give yourself a really good chance to win this football game tonight.
Great stuff as always, Luke. I appreciate your thoughts, analysis, and insight. Please tell our listeners where they can find you on 1570 AM WNST, the web, all the great stuff you do, as well as your blog.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. Right now, the latest 12 Ravens thoughts, complete with a prediction for this Thursday night showdown with Cincinnati. The final injury report. Certainly if you missed any, you know, because it's such a quick turnaround, you can even check out, you know, my thoughts on the Cleveland loss. But certainly we'll have plenty of post-game coverage throughout the weekend at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Tech Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you got the final injury report telling you that Ronnie Stanley out Thursday night, Marlon Humphrey doubtful. And also keep in mind, Devin Duvernay questionable with a hamstring that appeared to creep up during Tuesday's practice. So we'll see there. Not a big ramification there in terms of the offense, but special teams, that certainly could play a factor. Kyle Van Noy also dealing with a groin issue, although it sounds like he's going to play. But game day inactives sent directly to your mobile device 90 minutes prior to kickoff. So if you're in the parking lots, tailgating, or going to a local establishment, wherever it might be, inactive sent directly to your mobile device. And of course, in-game updates, any other significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive Tech Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any Ravens players and coaches, pre-game coverage, and of course, post-game fallout as the Ravens hope to improve to 8-3, hope to remain in first place as they then go into the weekend for their mini bye. But you can check out all that post-game reaction at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, Luke, have fun at the game tonight. And this is for our Sunday listeners, of course. By the time you listen to this, the game will have been over with. But a lot of fun. And at the stadium, blackout, right? Ravens fans wearing black clothes. Should be a very festive atmosphere.
I'll leave you with this last point because I didn't talk about it through all my rambling about the Cleveland loss. I said it to Nestor. I said it right after that game ended. They win this Thursday night game. They're fine. They're fine. Now, the big picture questions, playoffs, all those different things. I mean, no one can answer that right now. They win this game Thursday night. They're fine. They lose, and they've lost two division home games in 5 days, and they're no longer in first place because the winner of Cleveland-Pittsburgh is going to be in sole possession of first. Then it's not panic time, but it is take a long look in the mirror time and reevaluate time for this football team that looked so amazing just a week and a half ago. So hopefully we're talking about a win next week and getting ready for a trip out to I almost said San Diego, even a few years later, out to L.A. to play the Chargers on Thursday Night Football. Be well, Dennis.
Hey, to your point, Luke, the talk about Mike McDonald being the head coach subsided last week. And after this tonight's game, it may take another step forward. So big, big game for both squads for sure.
Week-to-week league, Dennis. Week-to-week league.
Stay well, my friend. There he goes, Luke Jones here on 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.